Welcome back. You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Last week, a federal judge ruled against the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians in a lawsuit seeking to affirm the boundaries of their reservation. The tribe argues a treaty from 1855 established a 337-square-mile reservation on lands that today include the cities of Petoskey, Charlevoix, and Harbor Springs. The judge disagreed. Matthew Fletcher is a professor of law, and he directs the Indigenous Law and Policy Center at Michigan State University. Matthew, remind us, what is the tribe seeking with this suit?
The tribe was seeking a declaration from the federal court that its reservation boundaries that were described in a treaty from 1855 remained extant. And what that means is they wanted to be able to clarify within the treaty reservation who had jurisdiction over tribal members.
So over the years, it's been a long time since 1855, how has this treaty been interpreted by courts? And specifically, how are treaties interpreted as opposed to other legal agreements?
Well, I think this treaty is probably, it's the first time this particular treaty has been interpreted really by anybody. Almost all the treaty cases in Michigan that involve these tribes, this tribe and the Little Traverse and a few other Ottawa tribes are from the 1836 treaty. So this is the first time. The way treaties normally are interpreted is that you take the text of the treaty and you take the historical circumstances of the treaty and try to cobble together from that history and that law what the Indian people who executed the treaty would have understood that treaty to mean.
Okay, so what we know is that with this suit, the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians were looking to affirm reservation boundaries as they saw it.
That's right. And to expound on that a little, the 1855 treaty set aside much of what is now Emmett County for the purpose of allowing Indian people who are basically Little Traverse Bay Bands members to select lands. And this is pretty unusual in American Indian treaties in that most treaties just go right out and say this area of land is a reservation. This treaty said this area of land is a place in which tribal members can select property.
All right. So take us back to last Friday and explain what it was that federal judge Paul Maloney ruled.
Well, in broad strokes, the judge said it matters that the tribal members could select lands within this area, and that the treaty didn't explicitly say this creates a reservation that cannot be untouched, that must remain untouched, that cannot be taken by anybody going forward. Why that's tricky is what happened with this treaty and often other treaties in the state of Michigan is that Indian people were never actually allowed to select those lands. Because of corruption, because of incompetencies of the federal government, inefficiencies, relatively few, probably less than 5% of Indian people are actually allowed to select land and have their selection perfected so that it would be protected going forward. And what that means, what the tribe's argument was, is that reservation of land, because it was never perfected, those allotments were never perfected, the reservation still exists. And at least a couple of things could happen. The reservation should be declared an actual reservation, or I guess Indian people should be allowed to select lands or receive some sort of compensation from the federal government for the failure of the United States to actually implement the treaty and provide for the promises that it made.
Matthew, when you use that word perfected, what's that mean?
Well, so the way the treaty reads is that Indian people could go within the reservation boundaries and select a parcel of land, say 160 or 80 acres or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a selection. And then you get a certificate. And a certain period of time under this process would allow Indian people to hold the certificate in trust. And the United States would protect their land holdings. And at the end of that trust period, the United States would issue a patent, which is, you know, just basically title to the land is now granted to this Indian person. And these are specific steps that the treaty provides for for the most part, were never really completed. A lot of times Indians would make a selection, receive a certificate, and that would be, then they would never get anything else after that. Or sometimes they would make a selection and never actually receive a certificate. Or maybe they wouldn't even be allowed to make a selection. And every one of those steps has to be followed in order for the process to be perfected.
What does last Friday's ruling from this federal judge mean for the tribe's lawsuit and its claim over these 337 square miles of what is now Emmett and Charlevoix counties?
Well, I guess the main impact will depend on what the tribe is really seeking. My understanding is that the tribe is very interested in having some clarity as to what happens to tribal members who are subjected to criminal punishment from the state of Michigan or Emmett County or the cities within, or in particular, the tribe is interested as to the jurisdiction over Indian children, tribal member children within that area. And if the tribe wants to leave this case off to the side and pursue specific negotiations or some sort of a side agreement with the relevant jurisdictions, which includes the state of Michigan but also includes the local jurisdictions, nothing is going to stop the tribe from doing that. They could always have done that.
Okay. So the tribe says it wants more legal jurisdiction over its tribal citizens within the boundaries. But how is the tribe addressing concerns of people who live within this area who are not members of the tribe, especially worried about whether the tribe might expand possible casinos or gambling activity and whether the tribe could bring forth a lawsuit against a non-tribal member in tribal court?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the materials. A lot of those things are not true. They're scare tactics from property owners association used to drum up, interest in, suing, responding to the tribe and paying for attorney's fees. But the tribe can do all of those things already on its own land. So if the tribe has land that is acquired and gone through the federal government's process of taking that land into trust, it can already engage in all those activities involving gaming activities or whatever the criminal or civil jurisdiction the tribe has. If non-members come onto the tribe's trust land already, they are subjected to tribal laws. If they go in the casino, they have to follow tribal laws already. So the only thing that changes, at least as far as I can tell, when it comes to non-members, if the tribe prevailed in this case, is that nothing changes. It's always been sort of a shocker to read some of the writings that the property owners associations have put out suggesting that, one of the things I read is that they were claiming that when you could wake up that the next day on your beachfront property and an Indian owns the land next to you and they're putting in a flea market, stuff like that I find kind of offensive, frankly. But all those things are overblown. The tribe can't have jurisdiction on and really anybody, even within reservation boundaries, if they're not on their on the tribe's land.
Matthew, how would you characterize the current relationship between tribal members and non-tribal residents in this area? Is this something that's very much on the minds of everyday people in the area?
I think it's sort of the white noise of the area. This is resort rural. It's a lot of summer people who come in from outside the community who own a lot of the best property. So there's always, in an area like that, there's always sort of this simmering resentment between the people who own the best property and the people who don't. And that includes a fair number of non-Indians as well. So I think that's a little bit of a part of it. But, the tribes in Michigan, especially in the Lower Peninsula, which is the ones that I'm more familiar with, have pretty good relations with local governments, maybe more so than individual non-Indians. But generally speaking, we tend to get along with our neighbors pretty well.
And I know the tribe is now looking at legal options. What legal options are there for the tribe?
Well, the most obvious one is to file an appeal to the federal appellate court. And they have some time to think about that before they want to go down that road. I still think, as I said before, they could, still open up negotiations over with the local governments and with the state and possibly the federal government over settling this thing. That's still absolutely an option.
Law professor Matthew Fletcher, who directs the Indigenous Law and Policy Center at Michigan State University. Matthew, thanks for your time.
Yep, absolutely.